This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Lin-Manuel Miranda's Alexander Hamilton.
How does a bastard, orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by providence, impoverished and squalor, grow up to be a hero and a scholar? The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder, by being a lot smarter, by being a self-starter. By 14, they placed him in charge of a trading charter.
And every day while slaves were being slaughtered and carted away across the waves, he struggled and kept his guard up. Inside, he was longing for something to be a part of. The brother was ready to beg, steal, borrow, or barter.
Then a hurricane came and devastation reigned. A man saw his future drip, dripping down the
track. Alexander Hamilton. Bah, humbug. Lin-Manuel Miranda's Alexander Hamilton, but Mr. Miranda, we're stirring the pot. We're about to engage in the haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda and debunk the deification of a slaver and a captain of the 1%. And who better to tell it like it is than Ishmael Reed, poet, essayist, novelist, playwright, whose satirical works challenge American political culture. His work, Mumbo Jumbo, has been ranked among the 500 most important books in the Western canon, and now he's stirring up the pot again with his new play, The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda. And bringing the play to life is the award-winning Rome Neal, artistic theater director of the New York Poets Cafe theater program, and he's a heralded actor, including for his critically acclaimed solo performance in Monk, and I do mean Thelonious. And to add further spice as we stir the pot, historian Dr. Gerald Horn, professor of history and African-American studies, whose research has addressed issues of racism in a variety of relations involving labor and politics, civil rights, international relations, and war. His work is a corrective to the bourgeois narrative of U.S. history. So Ishmael Reed, an iconoclast, daring to accost the Pulitzer Prize-winning Lin-Manuel Miranda's play, Hamilton, described as the most important musical of our time. With your play, The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda, why the imperative to disturb the revered production?
I was led to this play by historians like Gerald Horn. He's quoted in the play. It's not really a play yet. We conducted a reading over 4 days, but there's a revolution going on in the history profession where a younger generation and people like Michelle DeRoss and Gerald and Lyra Monterio and Nancy Eisenberg and others challenging the old boys' glorification of slave traders and people who believe in the genocide of Native Americans. This is all left out of the script that I've read for Hamilton. Even in Gone with the Wind, one of the people, the household servants or slaves, gets a speaking part. So Hattie McDaniel was assigned to play the role of the maid in Gone with the Wind. But in Hamilton, which I consider to be a billion-dollar instance of a consumer fraud, there are no speaking parts for Native Americans. As a matter of fact, Hamilton's attitude toward Native Americans is not even mentioned in Miranda's book. And then those speaking parts for slaves or the indentured servants who were present in the Schuyler household where the sisters grew up and in George Washington's Mount Vernon. So these points of view that are left out in Hamilton are covered in my play, The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda, which was directed beautifully by Rome Neal. So critics are asking, well, have you seen it? Well, I haven't seen a performance of King Lear, but I pretty much know how the story goes from reading the text. I read the text of this, the book for Hamilton. The basic theory that Alexander Hamilton and his spouse, Eliza Schuyler Hamilton, were abolitionists is ridiculous. Hamilton was involved in the slave trade all of his life. He received his first slave when he was a child. He received a slave named Ajax, who was a household slave. His mother owned four slaves. He worked for a slave importing company in the Caribbean, and his job was to assess the condition of the slaves as they arrived. His grandson said he not only owned slaves, but purchased them for others. That's the fundamental flaw of Hamilton, and I don't have to go be entertained by the songs and the lyrics and the dance and the costumes and this multi-million dollar production in order to understand that. The problem with this production is that they've hired Annette Gordon-Reed to sort of go to bat for this production, and I think that in order to preserve her sterling reputation as a great historian, Annette Gordon-Reed has to resign from this job. They've hired her to clean up the inaccuracies of a museum exhibit that's going to accompany the show when it goes on tour. Well, the basic inaccuracy is that Alexander Hamilton and his spouse, Eliza Hamilton, were abolitionists. To clean up that inaccuracy would mean that the show would close.
Rome Neal, as director of The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda, what most moved you in the conjuring up for the stage Ishmael Reed's character descriptions and the words they would speak? How do you relate to what our brother just stated?
I was talking to someone the other day. We were talking about the enactment in the book by Chernow.
And that was the initial book that Lin-Manuel Miranda related to.
How he took the information from that book and he didn't reach out to Black scholars for their historical information about Hamilton. It just took me back to a production that I did years ago entitled Shakespeare's Julius Caesar Set in Africa. I set it in Mali, West Africa during the 13th century, and I used Mali Ghanaian language in it. I took some of the things that happened and equated that with what was going on with Julius Caesar, and I feel that this young man did the same thing, but he just didn't do the research that he was supposed to do. I had been into Africa, and I was there and doing research, so I knew certain things about the continent. I knew certain things about the government of people during the 13th century. That goes back to his interpretation of this play that he put out. So he's got this false information, and he just went to work on it, and luckily powers to be could equate with it because they wanted to develop, take these essence of rap, dance, costumes, and like it says in the play, color up and glamorize it to falsify this information and be very satisfied with it. Because and one of the lines I like in the play when Ishmael says, "Why would the Rockefellers put so much money behind this play if they wanted revolution?"
Well, indeed. And Gerald Horn, you've concluded in your scholarly work, Unearthing of American History, that the U.S. wasn't founded on liberty, with slavery as an uncomfortable and aberrant remnant of a pre-Enlightenment past, but rather was founded on slavery. And then came the language of liberty and equality as window dressings. In other words, the traditional narrative of the creation of the U.S. is a fraud. And as such, the case for the incessantly promoted narrative of plays like Hamilton by Lin-Manuel Miranda, which is a fraud. Your thoughts and your response to Ishmael Reed, who, as he said, actually quoted you in the play.
It's an honor and a pleasure to be sharing the airwaves with Ishmael Reed, a logical successor to James Baldwin and Richard Wright as a preeminent writer in North America, and likewise with Rome Neal, who is a logical successor to Lloyd Richards as a shaper of drama and theater. With regard to the point so well articulated by Ishmael Reed, I'd like to add to his litany concerning scholars who have been trying to revise the traditional creation myth of the United States of America. Robert Parkinson of SUNY Binghamton, for example, in his prize-winning book, The Common Cause, does not go as far as I do in some of my books, such as The Counter-Revolution of 1776, but goes far along that road, as does Alan Taylor, the University of Virginia, perhaps the most rewarded and awarded scholar in North America, two Pulitzer Prizes, in his book American Revolutions. So what's happening is that there is a slow and sure and steady revision of this creation myth, and unsurprisingly, you have the promotion of works that help to recreate the status quo. It's not only this play, Hamilton. I'm thinking of the fact that the Black Studies program at Harvard has subsidized a book that basically seeks to refute a late speech by Thurgood Marshall, the deceased Supreme Court Justice, where he basically said that the Constitution, as a guarantor of Black rights, is wholly inadequate. Well, this new book by a Princeton professor seeks to refute Thurgood Marshall and return to the bad old days of 1776 and 1789. So I think that as the struggle mounts against these practices, such as police terror that targets Black communities, and we seek an explanation of why this takes place, inevitably there's going to be a searching analysis of how we got to this point and whether or not slavery was at the root of the founding of the United States of America, which leads to the unsurprising result that the descendants of enslaved Africans are still being persecuted and targeted in this slaveholder's republic. I think that that kind of result, I'm afraid to say, that is to say the searching analysis, is inescapable.
You didn't see the reading. I did at the New York Theater. It's vibrant, provocative, critically important, and I have to say that I found myself irked even more by the reality of the use of Hamilton, hip-hop, and the African-American cast. How wonderful, of course, to provide jobs, which are all too rare in Broadway theater, etc., at this point. However, it seemed to me the additional exploitation and manipulation and blaxploitation to try to validate a conceptual framework that perpetrates the worst myth about the founding fathers. But having said that, I absolutely love the reading and insist that we put together the kind of funds that will make this into a play, that it can act some historical corrective to the historic revisionism. Camille Reed, what do you want to know or explain relevant to each other's skills about this fraud that has been perpetrated on the public and the persistence of the myth of the democracy of people like Alexander Hamilton?
I think it was sort of like genius for them to use Black actors and Latina actors to stand in for slave owners. For example, there's a Black actress who plays Angelica Schuyler Church, who grew up in the household of General Philip Schuyler, who was very cruel to his slaves. He had auctioned off a whole Black family. And there was a slave named Diana who escaped from the Schuyler plantation up in upstate New York. When she was returned, she was punished. And we don't know what happened to this woman. None of these abolitionists, these Schuyler women, intervened when their father was, you know, administering a cruel punishment upon his slaves in the household. A team of archaeologists dug up the bones, the slaves who were owned by General Philip Schuyler, and they found evidence of malnutrition. They were short in stature. They gave evidence of having been forced to do backbreaking work. So these women knew about all of this, these abolitionists who were depicted in Hamilton. They knew the conditions, but none of them intervened. Now, Angelica, who's referred to as a princess in the book, Angelica Scout, she owned a slave named Ben. As a matter of fact, Hamilton left behind, as a matter of fact, an invoice talking about how he had transferred the slave named Ben from a man named Major Jackson back to Angelica Schuyler Church. We have a Black woman performing in this fraud as Angelica, as someone who owned a slave. Now, people say, well, doesn't this give Black people, that's what they said about The Color Purple, doesn't this give Black people jobs? Well, there were Black actors in Birth of a Nation. So just because Black actors get jobs doesn't mean that we can't challenge what's being presented on the stage. In fairness to Chano, he's your typical, what I call, tarnish remover in the play. They remove all the crud from the reputations of these Native American fighters, exterminators, enslavers. At least he says that Hamilton and his wife might have owned slaves. I think Miranda ignored this. Now, look at this contrast. The students in Puerto Rico picketed against this play.
Right.
They had to remove it to another site. There was such protest. They protested his glorifying an oppressor, Alexander Hamilton, and he said it was meant for the middle class and upper class white audience. They got it. While a lot of our students are so fascinated by the soundtrack or the hip-hop or whatever. You remember in the 1960s, we used to talk about using the slave master's language? Well, now the slave master is using language of the oppressed, hip-hop.
By the way, just to add, in Puerto Rico, where Lin-Manuel Miranda is at this point, one of the other issues of the protest was that he was a supporter of PROMESA, which is the installation of a fiscal control board known as the Junta on the island, which is just another manifestation of the tightening of the reins of colonialism over the island. He advocated in Congress for the institution of this fiscal control board is part of what people at the University of Puerto Rico were protesting, which caused Miranda, rather than to deal with the workers who were in protest and the students, he actually removed the play to another venue altogether. So clearly, his consciousness on a multiplicity of fronts is sorely lacking. And that, for me, is why this play is so important, because to put the public pressure on as a corrective of this glorification of the founding fathers like Hamilton, which perpetuate the reality of xenophobism, of anti-native indigenous culture, and certainly of racism.
I wanted to say that I lean so heavily on Gerald Horn's ideas in the first scene that I think he probably wants to sue me for plagiarism. We have George Washington tell Hamilton that his ideas about the United States being a beacon of hope for liberation is a lot of bunk. He says that we're fighting this revolution because these damn redcoats want to take our slaves. And I directly took that from Gerald Horn's book.
And, you know, we can go on and on about the play and what it means and things that are said in it. However, we are going to mount it in May at the New Eureka Poets Cafe for an extended run. And we're in fundraising mode to do that. But those who so would like to see this play up and would like to see us succeed, we don't have a multi-million-dollar budget to put this show together. We only have ourselves and the New Eureka Poets Cafe and a small budget. We're reaching for the funds to do it. So people who are interested in funding this production and being a part of a magnificent run at the New Eureka Poets Cafe in May, in which they will receive a treat by being part of the opening night audience with the gala party and everything that goes along with it. Get in touch with Ishmael Reed at ireedpub@yahoo.com.
That's yeah, it's one word, I-R-E-E-D, I-R-E-E-D-P-U-B, short for publisher. P as in Peter, U as in useful, B as in boy. I read PUB at yahoo.com, and I'll tell you how you can make a contribution and get a tax write-off for it. We have a 501c3 out here at the Before Columbus Foundation.
And I am honored to
and
be speaking with...
contribution, you get the opportunity to be a part of the world premiere opening night performance at the New Eureka and after party that comes with it. So it's a win-win.
When's the last time you've seen two Native American scholars in a play? We talk about Hamilton's policy toward Native Americans. He said Native Americans were savages and a threat, and they're natural enemies of the colonialists. And he was all for George Washington's policy of extirpation. George Washington was a mass murderer of Native Americans. He destroyed 40 Iroquois villages and demanded that everybody be murdered, men, women, and children, and their crops be destroyed. Not only the ones that were being harvested, but the ones that had been planted. So this was their policy, the Hamilton Washington policy.
John Washington.
That's right. John Washington was also a murderer, killed Indians, because he killed Indian allies, because Native American allies, because he couldn't tell them apart.
And let me just reiterate that I'm speaking with the incomparably important to our history, to our literature, the talented Ishmael Reed and director Rome Neal and historian Gerald Horn.
Let's support this play and let's make it a total success. 4 Weekends has proven it at the New Eureka Post Cafe. Unprecedented. I've been with the New Eureka for 35 years, and I've never seen for one reading of a play, but this was 4 days of readings of Ishmael's wonderful work, sold out house. So we expect that to happen throughout the run of the show. People are excited about the truth and what it means to them. You know,
one of the other things...
I would like to recommend...
Yeah, go ahead.
That your listeners read Lyra Monteiro, Nancy Eisenberg, and most of all, Michelle DuRoss. Google an article entitled Hamilton and Slavery by Michelle DuRoss, University of New York at Albany. She handles these people who defended Hamilton and promoted him as a great iconic figure, like Bonnie, and Bonnie and Clyde handles the Thompson machine gun.
And the latest
New Yorker magazine has a lengthy piece on this reading, and also the New York Times. So we got their attention. That was the idea. It's like another example. Sometimes the giant recognizes or is aware of the slingshot.
You know, I just want to go back. Ishmael, you're pretty gutsy because you were taking on the establishment. You were really taking on capitalism because one of the real manifestations of this play is that it indeed is financed by and is one of the great capitalist endeavors. What kind of flack do you expect? And do you care? Or is it too important for us not to be able to take the role of being correctives of the history of really white supremacy that is pervasive in this country then and now?
Well, you know, I'm part of a tradition. Goes probably back early to Frederick Douglass. But Frederick Douglass challenged the romanticizing of Robert E. Lee after the war. This person who was criticized by his generals like Longstreet and Joseph Johnston. Longstreet said he's really more of an engineer than a general. Who really, his contemporaries, the Southerners, they didn't build statues to him. They accused him of losing the war. So there's a totally different opinion of the contemporaries of Robert E. Lee than this romanticizing Robert E. Lee now. As a matter of fact, there were thousands of deserters. When they found the man was lost his mind and felt he was talking to God, wanted to fight to the last person, there were thousands of deserters from the army. And at that point, he talked about enlisting slaves to fight his war, people whom he considered servile. So Frederick Douglass challenged him. Then in 1912, the NAACP and Monroe Trotter, that's the subject of my new novel, which is being ignored in this country, which with Hugh came from China, called Conjugating Hindi. That's my latest novel. And I talk about Monroe Trotter and his struggle to assail Birth of a Nation and also the NAACP. Then we come up to the 1940s and Walter White going to Hollywood and opposing A Gone with the Wind. He tried to get Daryl Zanuck, who was the immigrant, who should have known better than to, you know, glorify these slaveholders in Gone with the Wind. Walter White, who was the head of the NAACP, tried to introduce him to Black Reconstruction by Du Bois. He ignored it. So this is a long tradition of our challenging the racist, supremacist narrative.
Well, I just want to reiterate, I don't know, Gerald seems to have disappeared into the netherworld of the phone system here. We regret that, but we're glad that he was able to get some comment and maybe as part of the surprise when the play airs or performs in May, he should be there. He should be there. And Ishmael...
Well, don't forget about Benjamin Quarles, who... Lyra says that... Miranda leaves out the fact that there were blacks who fought in the American Revolution. They're not present in this musical. And don't forget about Lerone Bennett, the black historian who challenged the myth of Lincoln. Lincoln as the emancipator and someone who really, really loved, adored black people. He loved minstrel shows. So There's a whole tradition of this.
And Ishmael, how do we, again, connect with you to make sure that we, because we have a historic obligation, we have an activist obligation to make sure that this play is realized, to fund it, and to make sure that all of our listeners are going to be able to get to see The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda at the New Yorican Poets Theater Cafe, which is one of the great institutions that came about as a result of the social upheaval of the 60s and beyond, and remains even in the gentrifying East Village. And we want to see that play there, The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda. How do we get in touch with you and contribute to make it so?
Well, you know, if you make out checks to the Before Columbus Foundation, which we use as a conduit. It's a nonprofit foundation, the Before Columbus Foundation. Make the checks out to the Before Columbus Foundation and send to my address, Ishmael Reed, at P.O. Box 3288, P.O. Box 3288, Berkeley, 94703, California, Berkeley, 94703, California, and you can take your contributions off of your taxes.
Well, I want to thank the great Rome Neal, one of the directors extraordinaire, social activist, great singer, great actor, and somebody who makes the best banana pudding. And if you don't know what I mean.
Don't talk about banana pudding.
Don't leave that out.
And jazz, jazz aficionado and the great Ishmael Reed and our wonderful, I'm glad that he got a couple of words in there, our wonderful scholar Gerald Horn, who of course will be back with us.
Can I thank Ishmael Reed publicly for bringing such wonderful, provocative work to my attention so many times. This is the ninth play that I've directed by Ishmael Reed, and each time he brings the work, it's an education, and it has me doing belly whops in laughter.
Well, you know, Rome has performed a miracle again. We were able to get international notice that we've challenged this Hamilton, this consumer fraud, with the kind of money that the investors in Hamilton spend for lunch.
I love it. Ishmael Reed, Rome Neal, Gerald Horn, thank you for being with us. We'll talk again. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.